Morning and greetings in the name of Jesus. What a privilege to be here again, thinking about the last Sundays and the miles that have been traveled. We feel very grateful that the Lord brings us here again. First Sunday we were gone was at Grasslands for communion. Good time there, where our daughter Charity is, son-in-law Joel. Next Sunday was at Stettler and communion there. And then we spent part of a week in Prairie Light, and they don't have a ministry there yet. They're still trying to grow into that. And finally at Shade, at Slave Lake, where Brother Dale is today. And in each of those churches, I had the privilege of talking about the difference between the evil eye and the good eye, the single eye, like I had here for counsel. So your sermon here was kind of an introduction, and I found out I didn't even touch on all of those verses along the way. And then last Sunday at Allentown, we were inspired by being there, but I really should not have accepted an assignment after I was away so long. Anyway, enough of that. Today I invite your attention to 1 Samuel chapter 3. I thought Brother Cliff was going to have my subject almost, but he chose a different definition for weight, but he did touch on it that I would think of. The word weight can also be weighed as a waiter does, right? And you're standing there wondering what they're going to tell you to do next, because we don't have servants. Even our employees, we don't do that much, where we go and feel like our life and our time and our attention belong to somebody else and we need to give them what they want. A waiter is trying to figure out what the people want and how quickly and how well he can meet those needs. And when you're waiting on the Lord, I want to look that word up in Strong's, because maybe it means that kind of waiting. Lord, what do you want me to do? How can I wait on you? Well, I don't know why I was led to 1 Samuel chapter 3, the very common phrase that we have. Title of the message this morning, it comes from verse 9, what Eli told Samuel to say and what Samuel said, although I like the longer version, "Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth." In other words, I'm here to do whatever you want me to do, Lord, so you just tell me what and when. And then when God told him, he wasn't so sure he wanted to do it after all, which is very often the case. So, "Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth." Now, this message started out with the title Samuel the Prophet. Samuel the Prophet, a man of God. The phrase Samuel the Prophet comes from Acts chapter 13, verse 20. It's repeated pretty often in these phrases that Samuel became a man of God and the word of the Lord was revealed to him. Now, the challenge for me and what I'd like to communicate with all of us this morning is that we would be a people who listen for and hearken to the voice of the Lord in our generation. This is feels more like a children's lesson, because we sometimes have children's lessons about Samuel. We don't know for sure how old Samuel was when this story took place, but he's in the house of God with Eli, and he's not sleeping. He keeps hearing this, "Samuel, Samuel," and he doesn't know what to do, so he runs to Eli. You know the story. And finally, Eli tells him to say, "Speak, Lord." That's not me talking, Samuel. It's God talking to you. And so you should say, "Speak, for thy servant heareth." Jewish tradition says he was 12 years old. And I think that is about the age when God begins to speak to people and to call them, to call their name, and we wonder, are we going to listen on God? But you never get done with that challenge. At least I haven't. 71 years old, and I'm still saying, "Lord, I need to listen on you and hear what you want me to do rather than just try to figure it out on my own." I'm also of the opinion this morning, the challenge is that we'd be a people who listen for and hearken to the voice of the Lord in our generation. But I'm also of the challenge is that we get better and better at listening on who we listen on. Did that sound right? We get better and better at listening on the person on who we listen on. And if you listen on your flesh and you listen on the devil, that voice gets louder and louder, more and more persistent. But if you listen on God and you do that, and I'm just amazed at Samuel, and all the way through, I don't find, well, he was a man and not everything was perfect, but he is listed as the first of the prophets. He's listed as the last of the judges. His name shows up in Psalm 99:6 and Jeremiah 15:1 and in the New Testament several times as a man who was a follower of God. And I love verse 20 and verse 21. This does not have our text. Speak, Lord, is in verses 9 and 10. 1 Samuel chapter 3, I'm going to read verses 20 and 21. And all Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, knew that Samuel was established to be a prophet of the Lord. My center column reference says faithful, and I looked it up, and it means firm, steadfast, trusting and believing. Samuel did his part, and God responded to do it, to do his part. And the Lord appeared again in Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by the word of the Lord. And you're going to understand more of the setting as we go along, as we think about this. And this morning, I don't think we're quite in a setting like they were there at that time, at the terrible situation that was there, but it's still a challenge for us to cry out and say, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. And I'm wondering, is that your testimony this morning? You're asking God to speak to you, and you're committing yourself to listen to what he tells you. As I look in your faces, I know that there are a lot of different callings that we have here. There's none of us that have been predestined to fill the exact same spot. It was a good lesson, wasn't it, today on predestination, at least in the adult classes. I did enjoy that discussion. You didn't choose to be born, and you thought you chose to get married, but I don't know if you did, because what God joins together, and he puts strange pieces together, but he wants us to be clay in his hand. Well, I have this message divided in three parts. First is Samuel's unique challenges. I like to think about that, because sometimes we think that we have it rough. And then his unwavering character, his Samuel's unwavering character, and then last of all, Samuel's unfailing commitment. And that's pretty close to the same, but we're going to go beyond this story and explore some of that. And I don't know that I fully understand why God led me to this message this morning, but I accept it, and I certainly want to rise to the challenge myself. Samuel's unique challenges. And I think of three of these things anyway at first. First of all, Samuel was transplanted away from his family into a very broken system. Samuel, you know the story behind this. Whenever Hannah was crying because she didn't have a baby and any children, and she's there in the tabernacle, and she's at the house of God in Shiloh, and she is asking God, crying out about this, and Eli sees her and accuses her of being drunk. And she wasn't. She was just overwhelmed with the burden that she had. And as God, she cried out to God, God listened to her. But it made, when she promised to give her son away, it made a very unusual situation, because he wasn't, it just says when he was weaned, I don't know how old he was when he went to live with a stepdad and stepbrothers. Now, he was a Levite. You'll find his name in 1 Chronicles chapter 6 of the house of Elkanah, but it goes on to describe which tribe he was, a descendant of Aaron. And so he was qualified to be a priest in the house of God, but the system was broken. Now, if you read, I don't understand it fully, but if I understand it, it sounded like they served about 2 weeks in the temple, and then went back home again, and the next ones did, because they lived in, the Levites lived in a number of cities all around the country of Israel, and they would come and serve there for a while, and they, as they rotated around, they were, appear to have been there for a short time, but they were forbidden to eat the visceral fat, I guess I'm saying that word right, of an animal. If you go to Leviticus chapter 3, verse 14, it's plainly forbidden that they were to eat from the sacrifices, but they were not allowed to eat any fat. They weren't supposed to get heavy in this kind of a situation. And I don't want to talk about and dwell on Eli's weaknesses, but it's obvious that something was wrong in what they were doing, as he just stayed there all the time. But Aaron seemed to be the high priest all the time, so I don't know that I understand the system. But they particularly, well, let me just read Leviticus chapter 3, and just so you understand, there's two passages that deal with this. I'm just going to talk about one of them. The other one is in chapter 7, verses 23 to 25. But the offering be a goat, he shall offer it, he shall lay his hand on it and sprinkle the blood. And verse 14, and he shall offer thereof his offering, even an offering made by fire unto the Lord, the fat that covereth the inwards, and all the fat that is upon the inwards, and the two kidneys, and the fat that is upon them, which is by the flanks, and the caul, above the liver and the kidneys, it shall he take away, and the priest shall burn them upon the altar. It is the food of the offering made by fire for a sweet savor. All the fat is the Lord's. But if you read in this situation, you find out that already Eli was not keeping that, and his sons particularly did not honor that, and it was a very broken system. Now, I don't know I don't know how you grow up in a situation like that, as transplanted into it, and suddenly choose to be something different than what you saw lived out. But that's what he did, because he listened for the voice of the Lord. Now, you don't find him, it's saying that he resisted that, but it's obvious that he did. The second point, even though his first one was that he was transplanted from his family, the second one is that the main priest compromised the law, chapter 2, verse 12. This is brought out here in this passage, where it plainly says they were the sons of Eli, they were sons of Belial, they knew not the Lord, and they made sure they got the fat, okay? We already read verses that prohibited it, and the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant came. I don't know how many of you like fat and all of that, but it does flavor, if you have fat in, along with what you're cooking, it does flavor it, and that's what they were after. So the priests who were to be a holy example were deeply rooted in carnality. Eli did it, and I'm not going to read the verses about Hophni and Phinehas, but they went further than their father, and they used their office for immoral indulgences. And that's a sad situation when the holy people are very unholy. But he had unique challenges. How would you like to do that? To be taken out of your own home and raised in a situation where the people were the right people, but they were wrong in what they did. Now, because of that situation, his unique challenge was that because of the wickedness, God allowed terrible judgment to come on the land. In 1 Samuel chapter 4, you read this terrible story of the Philistines joining themselves in array, verses 1 and 2, against the Israelites, and they joined in battle, and Israel was smitten, and so they get the idea to bring the Ark of the Covenant. And you know the story. In verse 4, they're going to take Hophni and Phinehas, and they go out with the covenant, and they're going to, it made them feel so happy they were going to win because God was there. The Philistines were intimidated about it, but the Ark of God was taken from the tabernacle, and the house of God was an empty shell. And so for 20 years, oh, well, it was just a few months that it was gone into the land of the Philistines, but it was many years that the house of God was empty of the Ark of God, okay? And so this whole thing happened that these two men were killed, and we don't know how old Samuel was at this point, but his examples were killed, and Eli fell over, and because he was already heavy, the people of God were defeated. So those are unique challenges. And I don't know that any of us have had challenges like that. I think we all have excuses to cheat a little and serve the devil. We all have excuses that, well, we don't have to do everything that we know that we should. But I don't believe that we have challenges quite like this one. I'd like to look more at his unwavering character in point number two. Samuel's unwavering character. He accepted his unique identity and calling. In chapter 2, I love these verses, how it develops it. In chapter 2, verses 18 and 19, it says this about Samuel. But Samuel ministered before the Lord, being a child, girded with a linen ephod. Moreover, his mother made him a little coat and brought it to him from year to year. How early can you be determined to serve the Lord? I know we think that you reach an age of accountability, but there's something in him that wanted to do the Lord's work, even as a young child. He felt that calling. And then in chapter 2, verse 21, at the end of the verse, it says how mom went back home and had three sons and two daughters, five children, six in the family, and the child Samuel grew before the Lord. So he was not home, but he was still growing. And then in verse 26 says, and the child Samuel grew on and was in favor both with the Lord and also with men. And I'm supposing that there were people who were thinking that, well, he's just a goody-goody. You know, he's determined to serve the Lord and do it. And he was probably rejected by a certain element who thought it was cool to be cool. But it's normal. Okay, let's go over to chapter 3 yet. We didn't even get him in verse 1. And the child Samuel ministered unto the Lord before Eli. And so we have that setting. And was he 12, like Josephus says, the Jews say? We don't know. But as he continued and he faced the challenge, we'll get to that a little bit later. Verse 19 says, and Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and did let none of his words fall to the ground. So how many times have we read that already? And then in verses 20 and 21, and all Israel from Dan even to Beersheba knew that Samuel was faithful or established to be a prophet of the Lord. And the Lord appeared again in Shiloh. So we have him accepting his unique identity and calling and choosing to be whatever God had placed him to be. And I just want to say that this morning in a lesson that we've had. You did not choose to be born into the home you were born into. You were not choose to be some of the things that you've been exposed to, some of the memories that you have tucked away as a young person. You did not choose. There's a lot of things that we did not choose, and it is normal for youth to feel like they do not belong. I imagine that Samuel felt that way, felt like a misfit, and that it would be better if he could escape and run out into the world. It's not unusual to feel that way. But rather than feeding his rejection and feeding his failure and choosing to think he was a misfit, he said, I'm going to connect with the one who made me, and I'm going to serve him. Speak, Lord. I know he said that as a child, but I hear that echoing through his whole life. Speak, Lord, for your servant heareth. So he accepted his unique identity. The second thing I have here is he accepted and respected his imperfect authorities. He could have easily looked at Eli and said, I don't have to listen on him, no way. Look at him. I don't want to point out Eli's faults. But in chapter 3, verse 4, the Lord called Samuel. He answered, and he ran unto Eli and said, here am I. He first of all said it out loud. He says it twice the first time around. And then after he ran to Eli, he said it there, for thou callest me. And he said, I didn't call thee. And so then it happens again in verse 6. He ran to Eli. Here am I. Thou didst call me. He said, I didn't call you, my son. And so then he still did not know the Lord, verse 7 says. He was learning to hearken to his authorities. I have this written in my Bible. To his authorities prepared him to hear the word from the Lord, because somehow or another this voice sounded like Eli's. How did God's voice sound like Eli's voice? But he chose to listen to what he knew. And God, the Lord, called Samuel then the third time, and he said, "Here am I." What are you saying today when God talks to you? God ever talk to you about what you should do with your life, what you should do with your choices, what you should do with your free time, what you should do with your money, what you should do with your life? And what do you hear and what do you say back? He said, "Here am I." And finally, Eli told him to say, "Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth." And verse 10 says, "The Lord came and stood and called as at other times, Samuel, Samuel." And I believe that God is still calling today. He still calls us in many phases of life. He's calling children. He's calling young people. He's calling young married folks. And he's calling old folks like us. And are we saying, "Speak, Lord," or are we saying, "I don't want to listen. I don't want to hear what you have to say"? But anyway, the point here is that he respected his imperfect authorities. I don't sense any disrespect from Samuel toward Eli. I don't sense any disrespect from Samuel toward Hophni and Phinehas, although it would have been very tempting. And I do not believe that it's our place to be, well, we get placed in situations sometimes when we work among people that we think are not very polished or very refined or very nice, and it can be very tempting. Well, maybe you don't have my temptations, but I think God always calls us to respect other people, think about their feelings and respond to them in a way that we should. Okay, I'll just leave that point and go on. Now, he embraced the challenge, "Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth." God has a message. He has a call for every youth. It's unique. It may be different. None of you will have to go, well, I don't think you will have to go tell Eli that God is going to judge you. He feared to go, it says in verse 15. Eli called him, and it says in verse 17, Eli told him, "Now you need to tell me everything, and God will do more to you and do to you and more also if you don't tell me everything that he told you." Verse 18, and Samuel told him every whit and hid nothing from him. And he said, this is Eli, "It is the Lord, let him do whatever seemeth him good." And I think he was more resigned to the situation, realizing he couldn't change it. And so Samuel took courage and shared the message. This is part of his character. He didn't water it down. He told the truth, whatever it is. And I don't know about you, if you face a challenge to tell the truth or not sometimes, but there are situations that develop that we know that if we say the truth, now there can be a kind way to say it, and we should look for that, but we can't really adulterate or water down the truth in whenever we are called to tell the truth. And last of all, I have here that he chose to follow God even when his leader and his influencers took the way of the flesh. If you look at other people, you will justify, have plenty of privilege to justify taking away from God. And Samuel would have had every reason to throw everything down and walk out of the house of God, walk away from the Israelites, and maybe even go join the Philistines. I don't know, but he didn't do that. He sensed that his calling was from a higher level than from mankind. I'd like to take his life in just an overview now for the last part of this message, his unfailing commitment. And if you go through these chapters, some of them jump away from Samuel's life, and it talks about how the Philistines came, what they did, the Ark of God, and how it got sent back, and how it ended up in the house in Kirjath-Jearim, and the men there fetched the ark, and it was there. But if you come to chapter 7, you will find in verses 3 through 14 that Samuel rises to the challenge. It was 20 years that the house of abode in Kirjath-Jearim. The time was long. It was 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. Verse 3, and Samuel spake unto all the house of Israel, saying, If you do return unto the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth from among you. Prepare your hearts unto the Lord and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. Then the children of Israel did put away Baalim and Ashtaroth and served the Lord only. And Samuel said, gather all Israel to Mizpah, and I will pray for you unto the Lord. And they gathered together to Mizpah and drew water and poured it out before the Lord and fasted on that day and said, we have sinned against the Lord. And Samuel judged the children of Israel in Mizpah. And when the Philistines heard that the children of Israel were gathered together in Mizpah, the lords of the Philistines went up against Israel. And when the children of Israel heard it, they were afraid of the Philistines. And the children of Israel said to Samuel, cease not to cry unto the Lord our God for us, that he will save us out of the hand of the Philistines. And Samuel took a sucking lamb and offered it for a burnt offering wholly unto the Lord. And Samuel cried unto the Lord for Israel, and the Lord heard him. Because Samuel hearkened to the Lord hearkened unto Samuel. And as Samuel was offering up the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to battle against Israel. But the Lord thundered with a great thunder on that day upon the Philistines and discomfited them. And they were smitten before Israel. And the men of Israel went out of Mizpah and pursued the Philistines and smote them until they came under Bethcar. Then Samuel took a stone and set it between Mizpah and Shen and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, hitherto hath the Lord helped us. So the Philistines were subdued, and they came no more into the coast of Israel. And the hand of the Lord was against the Philistine all the days of Samuel. Isn't that something? Now, you come again in days of David. We don't know anything like that. There's been no war around us, but as we read about what's going on in Ukraine and different places like that, and it drags on and on, and we just wonder, you know, how that would feel. And they must have felt the same way when they would harvest crops and they would get plundered and all kinds of things would happen to them. And then because they changed and hearkened to the word of the Lord, he had the courage to call out revival. He had the courage to call on the Lord and ask for the impossible, and God did it. I know it's different in our dispensation, but I just admire his courage. And it goes on to say that the cities, verse 14, which the Philistines had taken from Israel were restored to Israel. From Ekron even unto Gath and the coast thereof did Israel deliver out of the hand of the Philistines, and there was peace between Israel and the Amorites. And so he judged Israel all the days of his life, and he went on a circuit. And that's the second thing, that he committed himself to judging in four different places, Bethel, Gilgal, Mizpah, and Ramah. As he returned there, he was a judge, the last of the judges that served in Israel. How did he do that? Because he was hearkening unto the Lord. Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. I want to hear you. And we know we have the written word, but we also have a unique calling, every one of us, on our own life. And are we willing to fulfill that is the question. There's a sad chapter in this, in chapter 8, where it says that his sons did not walk in his ways. They walked not in the ways of his ways. They turned aside after lucre. Samuel didn't do that. They took bribes and perverted judgment. And so the people asked for a king. The next thing that I see is that even though it went against his nature because God told him to, he changed his perspective and anointed a king. And you find that recorded in chapter 8 here. The thing displeased Samuel, verse 6, they're asking for a king. They want to unite all the tribes. They don't want just local judges over them. They want a king who will unite all the tribes and fight their battles wherever they crop up, that they would fight their battles for them. And Samuel felt rejected because of that. But verse 7, the Lord said unto Samuel, hearken unto the voice of the people in all that they say unto thee. For they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. And he told them to go ahead and do that. And Samuel laid out what they would face if they had a king over them. But his humility to make this transition and authorize a leader who was not a judge, who was not a priest of the tribe of Aaron, he was not qualified in any other way but to establish an earthly king. Yes, I'm just amazed that he did that. And he gave a challenge to the people to obey him. Now, in chapter 15, you have the sad story when Saul didn't wait on him because he felt pressured into battle. And he had to tell him that because you haven't listened on me, then... And he grieved over that, over Saul's... And also, there's two situations. One is where he didn't listen and totally wipe out the Amalekites, but the other is whenever he didn't wait on the sacrifice. Well, maybe I'm mixing those two up, but anyway, there was two different times. But finally, Samuel had to go and confront Saul and tell him that, verse 22, hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices and obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as a sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. So he anointed this man and made him king, and then he kind of fit into the background. But after a while, he had to come and say, "But you didn't serve faithfully, so you're going to be rejected." And he grieved over that disobedience. 15:34, go to the end of this chapter. And it says, and Samuel went to Ramah, and Saul went up to his house in Gibeah of Saul, and Samuel came no more to see Saul until the day of his death. Nevertheless, Samuel mourned for Saul, and the Lord repented that he had made Saul king over Israel. Now, it says he didn't see him till the day of his death, and that would have been Saul's death, and he did see him that day, as we will see yet from that. Samuel took courage and took the message out and went and anointed another king in spite of the fact that it may cause him to be killed for it. And in chapter 16, he says, I have provided me a king. God told Samuel this among the sons of Jesse. And you know the story, how that he went and found David out among the sheep, those who kept the sheep, and anointed him. Verse 12 says, "Arise," and the Lord said, "Arise, anoint him, for this is he." Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose up and went back to Ramah, and that was his home village. But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. Well, we're not into following that story today. We're looking to a man in his old age who was still having to choose to say, "Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth." He died, chapter 25, verse 1. He lived out his days, and it finally says that. We don't know how much time elapsed, but the chapter opens with that sentence, "And Samuel died. And all the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his house at Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran." And you can imagine what the change was as they had seen them go from disorganization and chaos and defeat before the Philistines to organization and to having victory and again having respect for Jehovah God as he did that, and now this man dies. But he still lives. And it's very fascinating to read 1 Samuel chapter 28 when Saul is about to die and what happens in that situation as he goes to the witch of Endor. I think this is, as far as I know, the only time when they could call spirits up, gods up, and it's interesting to read some of their thoughts about that tradition. I think it's probably just nonsense. But it's true what it says here. The woman, "Then said the woman, whom shall I bring up unto thee?" Verse 11 of chapter 28. And he said, "Bring me up Samuel." And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, "Why hast thou deceived me? For thou art Saul." Because she actually, it wasn't just a spirit, or a demon that was an imposter acting like the person. It was actually Samuel came up out of the ground, out of Abraham's bosom, is what the New Testament tells us it is. And the king said unto her, "Be not afraid, for what sawest thou?" And the woman said unto Saul, "I saw gods ascending out of the earth." And he said unto her, "What form is he of?" And she said, "An old man cometh up, and he is covered with a mantle." And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. And Samuel said to Saul, "Why hast thou disquieted?" And that means, I looked it up, to quiver with violent emotion, especially with anger or fear. So what was Samuel feeling whenever he met Saul? Probably anger, huh? He didn't really want to come up. And Saul answered, "I am sore distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God is departed from me and answereth me no more, neither by dreams, neither by prophets, nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do." And then said Samuel, "Wherefore dost thou ask of me, seeing the Lord is departed from thee, and he is become thine enemy? And the Lord hath done to him as he spake by me, for the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand and given it to thy neighbor, even to David, because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord, nor executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore hath the Lord done this thing unto thee this day. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me." You're going to be in the land of in the realm of the departed spirits. "The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines." Then Saul fell straightway all along the earth and was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel, for there was no strength in him. Samuel died, but he still lived, and he came back to share the word of the Lord, because even in death he could hear the word of the Lord. He heard it in his life because he wanted to hear it. And this is where I want to challenge, or I want to close this morning. Are you a youth? Then you know that there's more than just one voice out there. There's all kinds of voices to listen to. Are you middle-aged? Then for sure you have made a lot of decisions about who you're going to listen to, who you're going to watch, who you're going to think about. Are you an old person? We're still here. There's nothing that fixes us in our earth journey to where we're not tempted to listen to the wrong kind of voices. We still have a choice to make all the way along the journey. And the question that I have today, can you say with Samuel, "Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth"? Can I say that? Can you say that? That I'm listening on the Lord. I'm listening to what he has to say. Ponder this message, because who you listen to, their voice grows stronger and stronger, and who you refuse to listen to, the voice gets weaker and weaker and will disappear. Let's kneel for prayer.